Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
Please allow me to pontificate a little bit on this week's reality check. Once you understand why unfettered government interference into the functioning of free markets kills an economy, then you will realize where we are right now as a nation and throughout the developed world. And more importantly, you'll then understand the dangers that lie ahead. Now, I hate, for the most part, government, all governments, not just those that haunt DC. Governments and free markets are like oil and water. Most governments have the primary task of interfering with the free market. Markets represent freedom for the people, and governments and freedom are completely antithetical forces. There is no better example of this right now than in Red China. Not the people of China, the government of China. China's massive fixed asset bubble, which was created by its government, now poses a systemic risk to the nation's financial stability, and even that can be extrapolated to the rest of the world. Many property developers, banks, and shadow bank lenders are exposed to the default or collapse of an absolutely unmitigated, over-leveraged real estate sector. The government has recently tried to curb this excessive speculation and all the debt that's in the property market by imposing various regulatory measures, such as tightening credit, capping home prices, restricting purchases, and increasing taxes. These measures have led to a sharp slowdown in sales, prices, and construction activity. Many developers, as a consequence, are facing liquidity problems and default risks as a result. And some of the largest ones, like Evergrande and Country Garden, are on the verge of collapse. So what is the communist government's response to remedy the faltering real estate market? Well, it is the opposite of letting the free market function. In other words, letting the real estate prices come down to a fair and functioning level. The government solution is to try and reinflate the bubble before it has even just begun to burst. Chinese banks have made pledges to cut mortgage rates, answering Beijing's call to make homes more affordable and help arrest a multi-month slump in the nation's housing market. And incredibly, the PBOC, the People's Bank of China, will guide Chinese commercial banks to adjust the interest rate on existing mortgages. In other words, renegotiating a contract already in existence. When a government has the authority to alter existing mortgage contracts on a mass scale, you know that government is just about done. Real estate accounts for 30% of China's GDP and 75% of household net worth. And it is a staggering 30 times the average income. You know, for comparison's sake, the home price to income ratio in the United States is about 8, which is still unaffordable. But imagine 30 times the average income. That's the real problem in China, and a problem that I can assure you that they are absolutely, completely not dealing with at all. And that, by the way, is the real reason that China is now not only incapable of rescuing its own economy right now, let alone the global economy, as it did in the Great Recession. The Chinese stock market has also come under pressure in recent weeks, as investors fretted about a worsening slowdown in the world's second largest economy and its real estate crisis on the verge of collapse. Since August the 7th, offshore investors have sold a net amount of 78 billion yuan, which is about $11 billion worth of Chinese stocks within the past 3 weeks. By August 18th, the Hang Seng slid into a technical bear market, falling more than 20% from its most recent high, which was hit in late January. Now, what does the government think is a solution for its flailing equity market? It's pretty much the same as what they're trying to do with the housing market. The Chinese Securities Regulatory Commission, the country's top securities watchdog, unveiled several measures to, quote, boost investor confidence, unquote, in the sagging stock market. The measures include reducing the amount of collateral stock traders must hold with their brokers and, incredibly, this is important, setting restrictions on how much and how frequently a major shareholder of listed companies can sell their shares on the stock market. This is a great example of how dangerous governments can be. Ostensibly, it may make sense to someone who is economically illiterate to try and support stocks by just preventing people from selling. But that is short-term thinking at best. Potential investors will then fear that they will be unable to liquidate their shares when they need to. Therefore, they will balk at putting their money at risk at all, and investors already in the market will sell at the first window that's open. So China will end up doing permanent damage to its stock market, just as it has done to its real estate market. Of course, the U.S. is not much better. It is hard to find a worse manipulator of interest rates and money supply than the Federal Reserve. Keep in mind that the cost of money is the most important signal in a free market economy. And it should be based, in my opinion, on the supply of savings versus the demand for money. And most importantly, that base money supply, that all-important base money supply, should be linked to the supply of gold, which tends to increase commensurately with GDP growth, which is labor force plus productivity growth. See how nicely that works? It just doesn't create rifts in the economy. It doesn't blow up asset bubbles. It doesn't protect banks. But we don't live in a real world here. We live in a fantasy world of fake money and government manipulators. Only in a fiat currency system run amok would Americans be forced to deal with a government that has pushed borrowing costs towards 0% free money in 11 of the past 15 years in nominal terms, and in real terms, negative for the past 20 years. This phenomenon pushed asset prices far beyond where a free market under a stable currency regime could have or would have ever pushed them. When the cost of money is artificially pushed to zero and below, surprise, the amount of leverage, in other words, the incentive for people and the greedy pigs on Wall Street to borrow, booms. And the consequences are always devastating. And this time will be no different. One of the consequences is soaring inflation, which we had, that destabilizes the economy and widens the rift between the haves and have-nots, which some people pretend to care about, like Powell. But really, it's the arsonist calling the fire department. Speaking of inflation, the CPI report for August showed an increase of 3.7% headline. That was up from 3.2% in July and 3% in June. Mr. Powell, is that the direction that we are looking for? Disinflation is over for now, and CPI is heading in the wrong direction, further and further away from the Fed's asinine 2% target. A primary manifestation of inflation can often be found in the real estate market. The latest bout with monetary madness sent home prices so high that they are now unaffordable. They are the most unaffordable in history of the United States. The home price to income ratio is at a record high. Inflation has sent real estate through the roof and caused mortgage costs to surge at the same time. It isn't any wonder why, then, that home purchases across the U.S. are getting canceled at a very high rate. There were 60,000 deals to purchase a home that fell through in August alone, according to Redfin Corp. That is 16% of all deals getting canceled. Now, of course, the administration can brag about Bidenomics and the inflation rate coming down from 9%, but consumers are painfully aware of the truth. Their quality of living, their living standards are falling. According to a recent survey done by the USA Today, which is not a conservative rag, and Suffolk University, 70% of the respondents said the economy is getting worse, and 84% said inflation is a big problem. I want to make a few more important points on this week's podcast, this week's reality check. U.S. federal tax receipts are down 8.4% this year when compared to the year ago period. Now, this begs the question in my mind. How can the economy be growing at all? There was no big tax cuts that I'm aware of. There wasn't any, by the way. And so the economy is supposedly growing at 5% according to the Atlanta Fed GDP, but tax receipts are down close to 10%. How could that be true? Both those things be true? Well, the truth is it cannot. The Atlanta Fed has it ass backwards. The truth is we were probably in a recession, and all the government economists are mismeasuring is inflation and promoting it as some kind of growth. Now, turning to the feckless Fed, their head, Powell, decided to take a pass on rate hikes at its September meeting today, despite the fact that, as I mentioned, acceleration is accelerating to 3.7% over the past 2 months, which is now nearly twice as high as the Fed's target. The truth is inflation has been above their 2% target for 2.5 years. That's the definition of stable prices now. You know, we now have 0% inflation with stable prices. Then it became 2%. Now it's 9% and over its target for 2.5 years. It went to 9%, back down to 3.7, and above 2% for 2.5 years. That's the definition of stable money now. Powell also chooses to ignore falling initial jobless claims and GDP, of course, that is projected to jump to 5% growth in Q3. Hence, my conclusion is Powell's inaction on the Fed funds rate is further proof that he is not at all data dependent. He's not even navigating by the stars that are obscured by clouds, as he claims is the case. He is sadly just a puppet of the U.S. banking cartel. That is all he or any other Fed chair other than Paul Volcker has ever been. And that those banks, by the way, are floundering under decaying assets and massive deposit flight, because deposits can't keep pace with treasury bond yields. And that is probably the real reason why Powell did not hike rates, because he doesn't want to put any more pressure on his precious banking system. You know, the ones that are in charge of leveraging the fiat currency-based money supply through the fractional reserve system over and over and over and over and over again. So, yet another economic cliff is now just around the corner. This one is set up to be a massive cliff. There's a cliff. Yes, I am not a Pollyanna, and I'm not a permabear, and I'm not someone shouting fire in a movie theater. There has been, and this is reality, there has been huge drawdowns in the stock market over the last 23 years. 2000, 2008, 2018, 2020, 2022, between 30 and 50%. We don't want to suffer those losses here. We haven't, and God willing, we never will even come close. In fact, there is no place better equipped to survive and thrive through the next coming crash than Pento Portfolio Strategies.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.